On today's College Football Inquirer, a shocker in Gainesville, USF beats Florida in the swamp. What does it mean for the future of Billy Napier and the Gators? Also, John Mateer looks as advertised as Oklahoma beats Michigan. Plus, our man Ross, a little transfer portal news. So what does it mean for the next John Mateer? Plus, Stephen Godfrey owes Brett Bielema an apology. Vandy comes back. So much happened. We have a lot to talk about on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer, and right now you can watch us. You're listening to us, maybe. But if you're said, you know, that Godfrey sounds really handsome. That he Dellinger is. With that that accent, that Gulf Coast accent, I gotta see what that looks like. You can go to the Yahoo Sports Network and watch. So we are on all leading FAST services. That's free ad-supported television. So what that is you turn on your TV, you look at the home screen, you see Yahoo Sports Network, the icon, click it, and you can watch us. You can watch Yahoo Sports Daily with Jason Fitz and Caroline Fenton. You can watch the Ariel Helwani show. You can watch, well, I don't know, Inside Coverage. That's live daily. So many options on the Yahoo Sports Network. If you want to watch it anytime on your phone, on your tablet, go to yahoosports.tv and you catch all those shows, including this year, College Football Inquirer. Gentlemen, it is time. I am Andy Staples. He's Ross Dellinger. He's Stephen Godfrey. We are stunned because, well, we shouldn't be. What looked like a lackluster slate of games turned out to be a banger. And we'll start where I live in Gainesville, Florida, where I didn't go to the game. My family went to the game. I did not go cover the game because I thought, okay, Florida's going to win this pretty handily. I want to make sure I'm there and I can watch the other games and see what's going on. Right. You know, Ole Miss and Kentucky are starting SEC play. And then I don't want to miss a lot of the Michigan-Oklahoma game. Guys, USF wins 18-16. And Ross, the clock is now ticking on Billy Napier again.
Again. I know. It's by the way, isn't it always like this where we think we have sort of like a dud weekend of games?
Yes.
Like something or some things, plural, happens that just blows it all out of the water. Andy, your guy Ari, I think like tweeted an hour before the noon kickoff yesterday, like, I got a feeling something crazy is going to happen, or, you know, what is it going to be? He was asking people to like guess, and yeah, like three or four crazy things happened. And it seems like that's the case every week. What an exciting day. But yeah, they get not as exciting for the Florida fans because they're back sort of in the same position, Andy, as you mentioned earlier, as they were last year, right? Where after the Miami and the A&M losses, and it feels like, you know, they gave Billy Napier a lifeline last year, Scott Strickland did, partly because he was returning the quarterback, partly because the revenue share piece was coming, the onset of the athlete revenue share. And now, and then, by the way, like just this week, right, or last week, Scott Strickland got a new contract.
Got an extension.
An extension. Which was interestingly
timed. And by the way, Florida
timed.
Has an interim president. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, still on the search I think because of what happened safe. with the issue with the Michigan president, which was insane. But anyway, Gainesville, man. I mean, you live in an interesting place, Andy. Mm-hmm. You really do.
Yeah. We don't need to get into all the politics of the presidential search, but let's put it this way. Ben Sasse resigned in July 2024. They're now in their second interim president since then. There is no permanent president in sight. And also the whole San Ono thing, the guy from Michigan who was going to come in. Essentially, him being denied the ability to be the president was to stab the board chair through the heart. So a lot's going to have to happen for them to figure things out. Yeah. So Scott Strickland, the athletic director, Florida fans who are wondering who would make the fire hire decision, he's probably fine. That's why they gave him the extension.
Yeah.
So he's probably the one who's going to have to make this decision. Look, they were going to fire Billy Napier after the Texas A&M game last year. They had pretty much made up their minds. They were getting ready for a search, but he brought it back. And it wasn't necessarily that he was that great down the stretch, but they did. And they actually said they were bringing him back before he beat LSU and Ole Miss. But you saw seeds where things were starting to get better. DJ Lagway looked like he could be very good. They were bringing back a good roster. And Godfrey, the problem, I think, and I fell into this trap because I said, okay, these guys could be better because it feels different. And this was basically off the LSU and Ole Miss games, those two games. Yeah. The thing about it is, if you look at the rest of Billy Napier's tenure, what you saw last night is exactly what it has been. I wrote a column. You know, he does the interview before the fourth quarter starts with Morgan Uber, the ESPN sideline reporter, and he says there's a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. And I'm like, no, these are completely characteristic of your team.
Yes,
this is what everybody's been watching for 3.5 years now. And so, Godfrey, what is it about us where we can't seem to let, when people tell us who they are, we still don't believe them sometimes?
That's an excellent way of putting it. And I'm probably going to throw it right back to you here. You're the alumnus. You're the expert. You're obviously very familiar with this area. But I don't think we were wrong in taking those LSU and Ole Miss wins last season as a sign of change. It felt like we build narrative. That's what our job is to do, is to sort of like take all this information out and try and find something we can explain to people. And those two wins, the time of year in which they occurred, I think the way in which like Lagway looked really good, right? Mm-hmm. You knocked two teams out of playoff contention. This is what feels like you're building momentum towards turning the corner finally. And I think I said it when we started in August, that I really wanted to watch Napier this season because maybe Florida could become a template for programs that get into hot seat mode with a fat buyout and instead say, you know what, guys, let's maybe stop, retrench, reinvest, look at our personnel department, look at our NIL, and figure out if there's ways to support or buttress this coaching staff. All that's out the window after South Florida. We're back where we started, okay? I'm acknowledging that. But
not the template.
Not the template at all. There's
maybe
two ways
a template
to
for
this.
The other way around.
Well, it's funny because I'm guilty of this. I said this too because I said, okay, Billy Napier has tried to do a slow build. He's tried to do it through high school recruiting. He's trying to build, you know, like you would in 2005. And it did save him last year because he had a cohesive team that he had recruited everybody and they didn't quit on him. They didn't bail on him. They rallied around him. That's why he kept his job. So I get why he thinks, okay, this is the way. Also, the other piece of this is when he was told he was coming back, it was with certain conditions. And one of those conditions was you need to hire a play calling offensive coordinator. And remember, I said he was told he's coming back before he beat LSU and Ole Miss. Yeah. Once he beat LSU and Ole Miss, then beat Florida State, then beat Tulane, he had enough juice that he could say, you know what? I'm not doing that. And those issues came home to roost again with the play calling last night. So that, Andy, that's the other piece of it. And now the people who would have, because the people who saved him, he sort of said, he thumbed his nose at them and said, I'm not doing what you told me to do. So now he's got no friends.
He built an extreme amount of equity in a short amount of time in November, and it probably swung it too far in the direction to where you could have had a little bit more of a diplomatic offseason. I think there's two ways to look at this in a very distinct way. It's funny, I just realized, Andy, you are the sixth person that I've co-hosted a podcast with who has attended the University of Florida. So I feel like alumni by proxy.
They're everywhere. They're like roaches.
We won't shut up. That's what that means.
Everybody talks about Missouri and Georgia in our part of the woods as journalism schools. You guys are prolific. There's a micro and a macro way of looking at this. We're it's fun, and this is kind of where I like to live, is this macro. The political intrigue of what's going on in the state and the University of Florida, the booster core, the Georgia's ascension in the last 10 to 15 years, the identity of Florida. We can do all that and we should.
Yep.
But your column hit on something that the Florida alumni that I keep company with so much have gone back to time and again. It's my tendency. I think a lot of people's tendency is to look at Florida and do it from the macro view. Here's the very simple way to sort of judge the Napier era. There's so much on-field stupidity. There's so many gimmies lost. There are so many, you could call them technical errors, brain farts, whatever. This is the same thing that I castigated Miami for. And so far, hasn't shown up yet. We could talk about Miami's other coach and how bad they looked at Duke later on. Napier, it kind of goes under the radar, Andy, and your column centered not on the palace intrigue, but just on... Dude, make your layups. And this coaching staff has failed at that time and again.
Do we think they had a meeting Friday morning? Because I know multiple teams and coaches brought this up Friday morning.
Okay.
Because they watched it all Thursday night. Do you think they had a meeting that said, be careful with your spitting? Obviously, don't spit on people, but be careful spitting on the ground
don't
even
spit.
Because you saw what yes. happened to Jalen Carter. He got ejected from the game that the entire world was watching.
Yeah. Right.
Florida clearly didn't have that meeting. They had a player ejected on the final drive of the game. When USF, Florida is leading, USF is trying to get into field goal range. They got 15 free yards because a Florida player hawked a loogie on a USF player. I will pose this to you, Ross, because I know we're following this other game that I'm going to mention very closely. I think it may be the dumbest penalty in Florida football history, which is saying a lot.
Wow.
Because one penalty in Florida football's history is Marco Wilson throwing the LSU tight end's shoe in the 2020 LSU game, costing them the game. I think this might have been dumber.
Yeah, the fog, the shoe, and the kick, which was insane. I remember going to Gainesville for that to write this huge story on Dan Mullen and how he was hired going into the SEC championship game, that if they won, they'd go to the playoff, and then they lost the COVID game in the fog when, he threw the shoe. I don't know. I mean, you remember how, this was so early in the season, this one. That one was so late in the season, and they literally were in the playoff hunt. It was crazy, and then they lost mainly because of that, the timing of that penalty. But they were both really bad. The one thing, and Godfrey mentioned it, that keeps coming up, and Andy wrote about it, is that, and it happened in the South Florida game, is that when they get to the red zone, right, they end up making just stupid mistakes. And they had to settle, I think, for three field goals.
Yeah, they had one drive in the first half where they actually scored touchdowns on consecutive plays that were called back because of penalties. One where they were called for offensive pass interference on a pick that happened 20 yards ahead of where the guy caught the ball.
Yeah. What's crazy, too, is that part of the reason that Scott Strickland hired Billy Napier is that his teams at Lafayette were, fairly disciplined and were organized and had this, deep, great culture and all of this stuff. All of the Nick Saban stuff, all of that.
Yeah.
And
consistency, Ross. They kept talking about consistency.
Yeah, we haven't gotten any of that.
Well,
it's crazy.
And Scott Strickland always talked about getting Florida off the roller coaster, because that's been Florida's problem post Urban Meyer is they'll hire these coaches who will have a great year followed by a terrible year and followed by a great year. Now they're just all mediocre. That's not better. But yeah, it is amazing to me how this has played out. And I think we see the ultimate, what's going to happen. There's going to be a change most likely unless he just comes out, because their next four games. Let's run this down.
Brutal.
At LSU, at Miami, they get a week off, back home against Texas, then at Texas A&M. I said before the season they need to go 2-2 in this stretch to have a chance to reach their goals. Yeah. Now, because I wasn't including a loss to USF in the mix, you got to go 3-1.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening.
No, I don't want to. I don't want to get off this. By the way, I think they're going to win one of those games in some sort of insanely convincing way, because that's how this thing goes.
Agreed.
That's how this goes. Really quick, the South Florida Bulls may be one of the least talented and inexplicably so rosters in college football for a while under Jeff Scott. This was a miserable program. Yesterday was about Florida and what they didn't do. I'm not saying.
Oh no, let's give Alex Golish his flowers.
Yes. He deserves for sure. But what South Florida has done to be opportunistic in a moment of don't interrupt your opponent when he's making a mistake kind of situation. This team was supposed to start 0-3. They had Boise, they had Florida, and they had Miami this week. This is a remarkable job, and the reason why I bring this up, and I'm not saying this is going to happen. I think Golish kind of elevates into the territory of, hey, if there are SEC openings, we need to talk about this guy based off of his experience at Tennessee.
I put him on that list about 3 weeks ago. I had a list of group of five head coaches who could potentially go into power conference jobs. And I had Golish on the list. And I had so many people text me like, what are you doing? I was like, do you understand how hard it is to go 7-6 at USF? And he's done that twice. And Byron Brown, his quarterback, is actually healthy this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I promise you they're going to be decent. I didn't think they'd be this.
No.
But I knew they'd be decent. And now
they play. They not only have they like amassed talent in the portal, but like they play really, really hard. And we saw that against Alabama twice, right? Took them all the way to the fourth quarter with a one score game. Miami, like, was it last year? They took in deep into the third in a one score game. Like, they've been so close, and like, here they are again. So it's not like this is some aberration. Like, the guy obviously can coach and recruit.
Dude, Golish is, Byron Brown got hurt last year. That's why they were mediocre at the end of last season. It wasn't because they stink.
I think I did this bit already on the show about the stare down against Tom Herman and that sort of like WWE moment against FAU. Yeah. That's him. That's that dude. He is that dude. Like, what they are overachieving, even with the amount of talent that they brought in. And Andy, I'll second what Andy said. Just because your program's in Florida doesn't mean you are entitled to having like quality or succeeding. USF underachieved for years in keeping up with the arms race with you, like UCF especially. It's not easy to win there. They've put themselves in a bad position over the last 20 years since Jim Leavitt, and what he's doing is remarkable. And so, yeah, if there is an SEC opening, I don't know if it's Gainesville. We're way too early to have that discussion. I would definitely include Golish in that. Sorry.
Well, I mean, let's think about some of the other ones that could pop, like Arkansas. You know, like that makes a lot of sense too. He's got a great like personal story. You know, he his parents
born
are
in Russia.
He's
Russian, dude.
He was
he's
born
Russian.
In Russia and came over. Yeah. And I remember talking to him when he was Tennessee's offensive coordinator, sitting down, and he like told me his story. And at the time, that was, I think it was like 2022. So the war had just started. And I remember him being like really sensitive, like to not want too much made about it. He's so sensitive to it, rightfully so. But he's got a really, got a really interesting story. Obviously was with Heupel at UCF as well. Didn't call it there. Maybe had a bigger role right at Tennessee, offensive coordinator wise. And but I mean, the guy, like, just talking to people too with their like sort of money people there in the collective. And by the way, they're in the middle of an athletic director search that should be wrapped up this coming week, too. They're trying to look for a new AD, probably somebody outside, almost
certainly
somebody
job,
outside of college sports.
And by the way,
a business executive,
that's an opportunity job to be AD there right now.
Yeah. Michael Kelly, their former AD, went to Navy from there, which I don't know that people would consider a giant step up. It's a tough job. And you've got to get the stadium construction home. Like, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, but I'm telling you,
and Michael Kelly, obviously older and like, you know, he's kind of older,
right,
and
he's done
a
lot of
connection
stuff,
to Navy. I think he was from or grew up in Annapolis. I can't remember exactly. Yeah. There's a connection there. And like, it was sort of like a going home for you into your career, it seemed.
The young fundraiser archetype of AD would do very well to get that job in that place right now, for sure. The other thing about Golish, too, is when the Nico stuff happened at Tennessee, there was a little chatter up here in Tennessee or over here in Tennessee, depending on your geography, that Heupel kind of lacked when Golish left. Golish was sort of the FU guy in the room when it came to the roster, where he's got that weird kind of rare combination of being like a hard ass with players who love him in return. That's hard to do. Most guys try to play at the hard ass and they end up alienating the locker room. Golish is a guy who can do both and engender a lot of like support from his players. And they really felt like at Tennessee when he left, they had kind of lost that a little bit. Heupel a little bit more of the executive guy. So it's very interesting to see how hard those guys are playing for him, which I know is a trope in sports writing, but sometimes you actually see it happening on the field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Andy, give a credit to your Florida guys. I don't know if you guys saw the there was a fraternity or a sorority, I'm guessing it was a fraternity, but that had a sign outside of the frat house that like said, you know, beat the Bulls or something, go Gators. And quick work by the fraternity, they pulled the sign down, they flipped it over, and they wrote "Fire Billy" on the other side and hung it back
nice
up.
Nice.
There you go.
It's not the first time that's been hanging from a frat house at the University of Florida.
Sure.
The Fire Billy chants broke out in the concourses of the Swamp last night. So We'll see what happens. Obviously, they have a massive gauntlet. It would take a miracle at this point, especially considering they got the miracle last year, and this is what it wound up happening. This is what wound up, you know, transpiring after that. So a lot of the same, and they're going to have to figure all that out. When we come back, though, we talk about another guy in the SEC on the hot seat, kind of in the same boat as Billy Napier, starting Saturday morning, ended Saturday night in a very different place because he hit in the portal in the biggest of ways. We'll talk about Oklahoma and Brent Venables and John Mateer when we come back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer, and we're very negative in segment one, talking about what's going to happen next for Billy Napier. Now let's talk about a coach who felt like he was in a similar situation, riding the same razor's edge as Billy Napier, where if you have a good season, you could wind up in the playoff. If you have a bad season, you wind up being fired. Brent Venables, we don't know if he's going to make the playoff at Oklahoma this year, but against Michigan, we saw that they got exactly what they paid for in offensive coordinator Ben Harbuckle, quarterback John Mateer. Brent Venables' mandate this past offseason was fix the offense. Gentlemen, the offense seems fixed.
Yeah. In Mateer, every time I looked up in this game, Mateer was making some kind of play. Like whether it was a scramble and finding somebody open, you know, 10 seconds after the snap. Or just keeping it and run it, right? They did a lot of just design QB runs. I think he had almost 80 yards rushing. I was sitting with a Michigan fan who at the end of the game, despite the loss, was like, this kid is freaking amazing. Like, you know, yeah. Credit to this kid. Yeah. And I think that's everybody's sort of reaction was, wow, you know, what he did at Washington State, him and Arbuckle, like, just sort of moved right over to Norman, and give credit to like OU's offensive line too. They sort of dominated, and not only that, but then I mean I think Oklahoma dominated on both sides of the lines. I mean they just crushed the Michigan's offensive line, and it's funny because the guy I was sitting at was like that was supposed to be our thing, right? Michigan O line, yeah. That was our thing, and they just got it was like
and
old school like SEC front.
You
know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But before I get into my thing here, because I want to co-opt this segment, this is yet another game. I'm just going to lie about it. I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. This is yet another game, I think, between week one and week two, where like I'm not out on the loser by any stretch. I don't know if Michigan is playoff caliber this season, but like this was okay. I understand the work in progress here, and I can see the current limitations, but I can also see like you're raising your ceiling. Young quarterback, all that stuff. So I want to put Michigan fans at ease. You went on the road. You lost. It wasn't embarrassing.
True freshman quarterback playing is incredibly confusing defense.
Yes.
It happens.
Ben Arbuckle. Guess what? Mm. This is yet another opportunity for me to point out, just like Cam Ward last year, guys, the number one pick in the NFL draft. The reason why I preach a whole hog philosophy to enjoying college football is this is yet another Houston Baptist incarnate word. Mm. All of these small schools you've probably never heard of in places like Texas, you know where they go? I don't understand. I do understand this.
Western Kentucky
and yeah. Washington State. Those two programs, folks, you need to pay attention to because they are not only routing offensive minds, but also their quarterbacks as well.
Arbuckle goes with Kittley to Western Kentucky from Houston Baptist, right?
That's yes.
Zach Kittley, who's now the FAU head coach, becomes the Texas Tech offensive coordinator.
Correct.
So Arbuckle at 17 years old at that point becomes the Western Kentucky offensive coordinator.
Yes.
Which gets him hired at Washington State, which gets him with Cam Ward and John Mateer.
Yes.
Who Eric Morris recruited.
Correct.
He's now the North Texas head coach.
North Texas, who's and they're undefeated, by the way, so watch out for them. I was going to shout them out later. There was like one stop. He spent a season in between Houston Baptist and Western Kentucky going back to Texas High School.
Seminole.
It goes back to Texas High School. Yeah.
Seminole High School.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, 5 years ago, he was a high school offensive coordinator. Crazy.
Not to be confused with either of the two Seminole High Schools in Florida. Yeah.
Would you throw in, would just pairing Houston Baptist, and Houston Baptist, by the way, is the school where like a Walgreens or a CVS like backs up to the corner of the end zone at the stadium. Like, we're talking small time here, folks. Houston Baptist and Incarnate Word in San Antonio. Those two schools are pipelining an offensive mindset, a philosophy. It's, yeah, I don't know if it's like Leach 2.0 necessarily or even 4.0.
It's Houston Christian now, Godfrey.
Oh, is it Houston? It's Houston Christian? Why are we rebranding?
They changed the name. Yeah. They didn't want to just be one denomination. They wanted to be all denominations.
Yes. All right. I'll definitely get off that. The idea of this, guys, and let me throw this back to you. Is this a reward for risk taking? Maybe not so much an Oklahoma standpoint, but Wazoo has to perpetually reinvent itself because of its geographic and personnel limitations. We understand that. Shout out to Helton, the head coach. Tyson Helton, thank you, at Western Kentucky, because about every season he imports not only a quarterback, but usually their play caller from another university. And it has created a sustained success for the Toppers. Is this a reward for taking a risk? I feel like this is, we're so conservative. And then we find these programs that are just like, hey guys, we got to kind of throw it against the wall and figure out what works. And to see Oklahoma and Miami last year do this, this kind of like, this brings me joy. This is fun. This is what's so unique about our sport.
And I think we can contrast this with what Oklahoma did last year. So Jeff Levy leaves to become the head coach at Mississippi State. And we'll talk about him later too, because he had an incredible win last night. But Jeff Levy leaves. Brent Venables goes with what would be probably considered the quote-unquote safe hire. Seth Littrell becomes the OC. Seth Littrell was the North Texas head coach, was a longtime Mike Leach lieutenant, you know, steeped in the air raid, but hadn't really been an offensive coordinator or an effective offensive coordinator in a while. And it looked terrible last year. And Brent Venables said, on the record, I hired the wrong guy. And so you go with this 29-year-old who's up in Pullman working miracles and has a crazy quarterback who happens to be from Texas, happens to be from the area that Oklahoma would normally be recruiting. Because John Mateer's from Little Elm, Texas. He's from a high school that was traditionally bad. It's a 6A school, so we're talking big school football. They were traditionally bad. I believe they started his senior season 6-0. And that is where the interest came in. That's where you're like Eric Morris, yeah, who was the guy who recruited him. That's where the people really take notice. They end up going, I think, 6-6 that year. And
Andy, this is exactly like Cam Ward having to run a triple at an high school.
Again, who recruited Cam Ward? Eric Morris, when he was an Incarnate Word.
It's kind of amazing, honestly. To bring it back to this, I don't know if this solves everything that ails Oklahoma, but you can take a nice long sigh of relief. Like, this was the game of the night, right? National platform. They came out. They looked so much better than they did last year. So, you know, great for them. Also, again, I just want to throw this in there to be nice to Michigan. Everything's fine. We're in a new era. Take a quality loss. Build upon it. You're going to be fine.
They did say they were fine. Remember the quote from Sharon Moore afterward about the little scuffle on the sideline? Do you guys see that?
Yeah. Bryce Underwood and Justice Haynes getting into it.
Yeah, Haynes, the running
back.
That's
okay.
And there's a little. No, it's good. It should. Yeah. I mean, shoot. You got a true freshman quarterback. It's going to like approach a player on the sideline like that. A lot of people think that actually is a positive, right?
I'm fine with that. Oh, by the way, Justice Haynes scored a 75-yard touchdown right after that.
Yeah, then right after. Yeah, to begin the third quarter, right?
They resolved the issue.
You know, afterward they talked about the miscommunication, which really, when you look at, we talked obviously a lot about Oklahoma and Mateer and offense and controlling the lines, and they did do all that. But, man, Michigan, like, shot itself in the foot so many times when it was given a door, like, given the crack in the second half, three or four times, Oklahoma just sort of let them back in, or could have let them back in if they had moved the ball consistently. And Underwood just, if he wasn't getting time, he was missing throws, or it was just going off the fingertips, or it was just getting dropped completely. I think he was 1 of 10 when Oklahoma blitzed, is some like the data, deep data stats I saw. So, I mean, look, true freshman on the road. But they also, just that would lead to that sort of sideline verbal altercation or whatever you want to call it. They they had like maybe three, maybe four, like miscommunication, total like handoff, wrong handoff the wrong way. You know, pass that was supposed to go left shoulder went to right shoulder. They missed a touchdown that way, right? They missed a touchdown the second half when he threw to the, he threw to the sideline. He was supposed to throw down the middle of the field. The receiver cut to the middle of the field and in a post route instead of like a corner. And so we saw a lot of like missed opportunity. Yeah. But that's what you're going to have, I guess, with a true freshman quarterback in an atmosphere that looked pretty wild.
Ross oriented. Do you guys credit that to what we were talking about Thursday, which was the idea that, I mean, Venables, when he's at his best, is disguising, confusing. Like he's he's bringing nonsense to the line. You're not able to read off of it. Or is it? It could be a yes and, which is just young quarterback in big situation.
I think it's probably a little bit of both. Like I think Bryce Underwood as a junior probably handles all that differently, but I think Venables dials it up more because he knows he's dealing with a true freshman. And it took advantage of it. And it's interesting because remember Michigan signed Mikey Keene out of the transfer portal, former Fresno State quarterback who had played for Chip Lindsey, their offensive coordinator at UCF. And Keene gets hurt before spring practice, can't really play in spring practice. Underwood goes in, gets the first team reps. And it's like, okay, now that's the guy. But there is a risk throwing a true freshman out here like this. And we were talking about this. I was talking about this with my co-host Ari on the On Three show. Is it better now to get the veteran out of the portal? And if you have the freshman, just let him marinate for a little while. Mateer, obviously, like you can't have Mateer and an Underwood on the roster at the same time unless you've got just gobs of money. But it seems like Mateer is the better option to win now, obviously, because he's an experienced guy who you saw there was nothing. And Michigan, like Wink Martindale's defense is very confusing to quarterbacks. But Ross, John Mateer looked like he'd been starting at quarterback at Oklahoma for 10 years.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, Andy, you brought up a good point. Like there's two philosophies that are starting to emerge here when it comes to quarterbacks and offenses, right? You recruit from high school and you play your young quarterback, and or you just go out, right? You let your young quarterback sit for a couple years and you go out and get an experienced guy. And the one that like comes to mind that did the opposite of what Michigan sort of is doing is actually the program that Bryce Underwood decommitted to, so LSU, Brian Kelly took over. Right. He could have just thrown like Nussmeier out there.
Yeah.
Right. Or at the time, Walker Howard, right, was on that roster. Like instead, he got Jaden Daniels. And for 2 years, they got to sit. And Nussmeier got his first start, obviously, last season. And we're seeing him this year. So it's like it's just this different in philosophy of what you want to do. And I don't know what's right, what's wrong. But certainly you would feel better if you had a 2 or 3 year player starting at quarterback. You know,
is the ideal situation then, Ross, just too, like Andy said, is it just too expensive? Essentially, you're investing in a long term sort of superstar solution that you've got to pay for out of high school and then also probably still free up funds to be competitive enough to find that veteran starter so you don't have to throw the kid out to the wolves.
Yeah. I mean, like the position Michigan's in, right, is that you're devoting so much money to this person, even though it's a little different, the numbers right now, because of all the front loading, right? That one happened in the spring. So all that's not counting sort of on your go forward rev share. But still, like didn't Portnoy tweet, Dave Portnoy, who was involved kind of in the recruitment and all this stuff, didn't he tweet last night during the game something about talking to Joe Lynn, the fiance the wife or girlfriend or wife of Larry Ellison, who basically paid the money for Bryce Underwood. I think Dave Portnoy tweeted, I'm going to text Joe Lynn and, you know, some. I forgot exactly what it was. I'll have to go back and look at it. But like things like that, you know, it's crazy. It's like, I guess it's given like this is the era that we're in college athletics, but that's the pressure on like paying so much, having your donors pay so much
for a
young player and thrusting, you know, feeling forced to thrust them out there.
So you're implying that Portnoy was like mad about the ROI after one game?
Yes, exactly.
Listen to me, not you guys, the world. Listen to me. This is why you need to be careful with who you platform.
Yeah.
Because if you get into this kind of dumbass media circus, this is going to be detrimental to the development of the kid because he has a platform bigger than us.
He platformed himself. He created the company that is the platform.
Michigan has the ability to let certain people in and keep certain people out, even with money. And you need to be careful about that.
Here's this tweet, which was at 8:47 p.m. I mean, that was probably like in the second quarter, right, of the game. I'm about 2 seconds away from texting Jolynn and telling her to call Sharone right now and tell him he's gone if we don't let the kid throw the football.
Part of this, too, is that Portnoy excels in going into business for himself. He doesn't he wants you to believe that he has that stroke and that access when in actuality he doesn't. The problem is he has a sort of chorus of idiots who can amplify that.
Also, there's a reason he doesn't coach football because that would have made things exponentially worse.
I tell you what, go ahead and air it out in that situation, Dave.
Yeah,
Donovan McCulley made one nice catch last night, but their receivers are not good.
They weren't getting open, and the line wasn't really blocking. Like the Michigan fan I was watching the game with kept saying the same thing. And I'm like, yo, they can't block. Like, the irony, is he going to have time? He doesn't have time to throw.
The irony that a Michigan program off of a disputed national title based off of off-field controversy.
I'm saying it's
tainted or whatever. To now have this sort of like circa late 90s Auburn booster doing this stuff on social media. It's amazing to see what that brand has become in Ann Arbor.
It's beautiful. It's fun.
It's a look. Yeah, it is
highly
fun.
Entertaining.
It is
fun. All right, let's switch back to the Oklahoma side because Ross had some news late last week that I think will affect the next team that finds itself in Oklahoma's boat from last season. And that's you've got the pieces, but you need the offense and the quarterback and you got to figure that out. And so you got to go to the portal to get it. Ross, how is the portal potentially going to change next year?
Yeah, it's been a long process to this point. We finally arrived this past week where the NCAA Football Oversight Committee did vote to support a single football transfer portal in January. So instead of having a spring and a fall, they'll have a 10-day window in January is what they voted on. It'll be January 2nd and it'll close January 11th, I believe. So right in the middle of the semis in the right before the championship game, college football playoff championship game, which is why, of course, the Big Ten was against it, or part of the reason they were against it. And that was the only league against it, right? They voted, I don't know exactly what the vote was, but the Big Ten in general was the only conference that at least publicly did not support this. Now it has one more step, although everything I'm told is that the step is just sort of a rubber stamp by the administrative committee. But because of NCAA rules, this thing's got to sit for a few weeks and be like socialized. It's like a long whatever process. Part of the reason the NCAA is changing its governance structure is to get quicker, right? But they haven't changed the governance structure yet. That's official in October. So they still are under part of the old rules. So it may not be until October that this actually gets the rubber stamp.
This thing would start in January. And oh, by the way, we don't know if somebody's going to sue and just blow it up.
Well, somebody's definitely going to sue and potentially blow it up, right? We're going to have lawsuits. Like somebody's going to try to get in the portal in December or in the spring or whatever, and there's going to be a lawsuit. But let me remind everybody of what happened in January. Which was a Wisconsin player Xavier Lucas.
That's what I was about to bring
unenrolled up. And enrolled at Miami outside of the portal window, which basically paved the way. And this happened at LSU, by the way, just under the radar a year and a half ago. A player did the same thing, unenrolled from somewhere, I can't remember, enrolled at LSU outside of the portal window. The portal is unenforceable. It's always been that way. But the NCAA has put rules sort of around it where if you don't get in the portal at the time the window is open, then you like can't speak or communicate to any other schools. Well,
yeah,
that's
somehow
going
everybody
on.
Manages.
Yeah, everybody's communicating with everybody at any time. So the portal's mostly unenforceable. So we'll see how this works.
So this is one of those where if I'm Joe Tailgater, I'm not expecting anything to impact me as the fan yet. This is just yet one of those incremental sort of.
Yeah, items. Well, I think the biggest impact, two things. If players and agents do wait until the portal opens to get in, if they decide not to do this workaround that a few of them have done, one of the issues is, right, by January 2nd, most jobs will be filled after head coaches have been hired. So do some players maybe who are going to get in the portal in December in the changeover and all that stuff or whatever, do they sort of wait? You know, do you
I think
have
they'll
teams
wait, but what I think you're going to get is there will be there's no tampering's not allowed, but nobody cares and everybody tampers. There'll be this massive tampering period kind of between December 15th and New Year's. And I would say most of the players that are going to start for power conference teams the next year when they after they transfer will know where they are going before they ever put their name in the portal.
Yeah. And one of the things too, I believe it's still the case. I guess I haven't seen the exact legislation, but if your head coach leaves, you know, you can transfer. Right, you're allowed to, just like now, that would stay the same. Another issue, I think another thing, Godfrey, that would change for like casual fan is that, you know, after the spring, right, or after January, you kind of like should know your team, right? Like you won't have that spring portal, which we've seen a lot of movement in the spring portal, especially for new head coaches who come in and load up. Shoot, it wasn't West Virginia or North Carolina, maybe got like 30 players.
Yeah.
After the spring portal, like, you know.
Well, and North Carolina also lost their best pass rusher to Ohio State in the spring portal.
In the spring, right?
Yeah.
Right.
So
right.
Maybe they don't lose a Bo Atkinson next year.
There's ways around this with the unenrolling and rolling. There'll be lawsuits, you know, and we'll just, there'll be. What I'm getting at is I'm not exactly sure how long this actually will last and if it'll be any kind of permanent solution at all.
Okay. So if I am that kid at that tailgate, then yeah, it's just, it's
then you're having another drink.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Okay.
Maybe you could keep your team in the spring. Maybe that's the one thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, maybe we won't lose anybody.
I think the signal to noise has been so distorted for people. Like, you know, we're sitting here in week two and we're hearing what on paper maybe years ago would look like a seismic development. It's just like, well, that's just going to get gobbed up again and we're going to keep doing our thing.
By lawsuits.
Yep.
Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty just much. Checking. That's the way it works now.
Yep.
One thing that doesn't change though is a huge win can change everything for you. When we come back, let's talk about what happened at Ross's alma mater last night, because that was something that Mississippi State desperately need. We'll talk about that. Oh, and I believe Stephen Godfrey has an apology for one Brett Bielema.
Maybe.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer, and let's head to Stark Vegas, because this is a place that needed a big win. Saturday night, Mississippi State jumps out to a 17-0 lead against Arizona State. The cowbells are clanging. Everything seems happy. And then in the second half, Arizona State just begins running the ball right up Mississippi State's you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
Arizona State builds a 20-17 lead with 1 minute and 38 seconds to go. And then what happens? Blake Shapen throws a dart, a seed, a P-rocket for a 56-yard touchdown, I believe. And clanga, 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 Mississippi State is back. This is a program that badly needed this win. Brennan Thompson makes a 58-yard touchdown catch with 30 seconds to go. Huge win for Jeff Levy and Mississippi State.
Clangity clang. You know, this was just hearing from people this morning and late last night in Starkville. It's sort of like everybody just breathed this long, excited sigh of finally, right? Like finally. Because you go back to the end of the Dan Mullen era, right? Where he gasped, he left Mississippi State for an in-state rival. Not only that, but the AD at Florida, who's a Mississippi State alum, took him, right? And everybody's hearts were broken in Starkville in a way that everybody loved Dan Mullen, but certainly loved the way he won.
Yes.
But you start there.
And then they thought everybody could do that and fire Joe Moorhead way too fast.
2 years of Joe Moorhead, very quick trigger there. And probably, you know, one of those seasons certainly had, talent-wise, a defense that was probably like the best in the country that they seemed to sort of waste. Yeah, a
couple first-round picks.
Yeah, yeah. Like, talent-wise, it was incredible. 2 years of that, right? And then obviously you had what happened with Mike Leach, and it felt like he was building everything up, and the pirate culture was like there in Starkville, and he obviously won a couple of big games, maybe not quite like what we saw last night, because we haven't seen that, I feel like, since the Dan Mullen era in Starkville, like that kind of excitement there.
Ranked
and then obviously he passes in a terrible, awful, sad situation. They make this really quick hire with Arnett. Lasts a year. It's a disaster. And then last year is Lebby's first year, and it's just be honest, right? It's one of the worst, back-to-back, the worst two seasons in Mississippi State football history. And going into this year, the theme was we're going to be better. That's what I heard from a lot of people, better than last year, but the bar is obviously very low. And so I don't know how many people really believed that they were going to be that much better. But last night we saw a defense that, especially in the first half, as Andy mentioned, like flew around the field and just looked really, really good. And Blake Shapen in Mississippi State's offense did enough in the end. By the way, can we talk about, holy cow, they played cover zero on the last play.
Yes.
Kenny and dude. Arizona State played cover zero.
What are we doing?
I mean, wow.
What are we doing?
I mean, that is, and this got burnt. Just got burnt down the middle. We're cover zero, right? You get burnt by.
Mississippi State
right
fans have been scarred by that. I remember Devontae Smith, his freshman year, catching a touchdown pass right at the end on against cover zero to beat the Bulldogs. So they've been scarred both ways.
Also, Arizona State gets, like, look, running the ball worked, and that was the right thing to do to come back in that game. But that, the goal line play calling, when they were down, but on the three with goal to go and a fresh set, like just bang, 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 kind of ran into a wall three times, kicked the field goal. I don't think they anticipated being in that situation, what their defense had done in the second half, but God, like really, really conservative play calling inside the end zone, not creative at all. Didn't even try and roll anybody out or do anything like different. And then, the defensive alignment was like, you saw it happening. I mean, like it was one of those where you could just you kind of, it's like the Leo meme of the kind of like, oh, there it is. Like it was that instant you could point and see it happening before it actually did.
That was the goalpost came down. I mean, that was as excited as they've been in Starkville in a long time. The exact opposite thing happened in Blacksburg. So in Blacksburg, huge excitement. They played tough against South Carolina last week. Virginia Tech gave them a fight. Virginia Tech jumps out on Vanderbilt, jumps out to a lead. Everybody's pumped.
Dude.
It's 20-10 at halftime.
Yeah. And then, Andy? 34-0. Vanderbilt outscores them. On 200, they had 201 rushing yards in the second half. And
crazy.
By the time people, I think, were flipping over to check out the end of that game, there are a series of different design and some just outright like we're sending the house blitzes that Clark Lee and that staff dialed up to just absolutely harass drones. That was a demoralizing loss for Virginia Tech. I talked about it on Thursday as being kind of a must win for the sanity of that program, and Vanderbilt put that wood on them. That was evidence of functional NIL bringing in talent versus what Virginia Tech's athletic director Whit Babcock had talked about in the offseason. The disparity was noticeable, especially on the lines.
And the thing is to go from being so excited because you jumped out to a lead on them to utter despair. This will never get better. When Virginia Tech or when Vanderbilt scored to go up 37-20, they did a wide shot of the stadium, and it was emptying out. And the stadium was empty at the end of the game. And it was pretty telling. And so my friend Annie Bitter, who I used to work with at the Athletic, does an incredible job covering for Virginia Tech sidelines now.
Right? He put it in perspective. He basically took it back to the end of the Justin Fuente era. Like, this is Virginia Tech has no choice at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Virginia Tech is kind of, we just talked about Mississippi State, right, in the last several years. I mean, when you look at sort of the trajectory of that program, losing sort of, we talked about Mississippi State, right, losing Dan Mullen, and Virginia Tech losing Frank Beamer. And since that happened, what's happened? And I think there are a decent amount of comparisons there. There's just not been, and there's a decent amount of comparisons between the two schools in general and their fan bases. I think there's a lot of similarities. And it just, at 3-8, 7-6, 6-7, and now 0-2 for Brent Pry, or as my colleague Dan Wolken called him in his misery index, Brent Fried.
Oh God.
And I think Brent's buyout is fairly affordable. I have to go back and look, but it's
not
like
bad.
It's in the seven figures, not the eight, I think.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it's lower this year, obviously. So they had an eye on it last year. Now, the problem is everything's cost prohibitive at Tech. So it's very reasonable, because we spend our time talking about SEC buyouts and the lunacy that's associated with that. But those single-digit million-dollar buyouts are somebody's still eating that, and it's a lot harder to do in the middle two conferences.
Yeah, it's six to seven.
Yeah,
depending on, I guess. Exactly.
And I think an ACC program that isn't in Florida or Clemson, their six is the SEC's 20. Honestly,
yeah, I think that's fair.
So
yeah, I think that's fair, especially when you compare the media rights. Yeah, I think the distribution in general is, six. What is 6 to 7 million? Buy your roster an additional, even above the cap, third party, whatever, right? That's like, it could be 10 to 12 decent players or so.
Before I apologize, Andy, to Brett.
You read my mind.
Damn it.
The apology.
Just want to shout out, there was like an entire narrative thread yesterday of being down maybe 10, maybe 16, maybe 14 in some of these games and mounting interesting second half comebacks. Turns out all Clemson really needed to get things going, to get their quarterback throwing touchdowns in the end zone, was a good old butt bounce. I don't know if you guys saw this. They're down 16-0. It's a weather delay against Troy. Things are looking catastrophic for Clemson's season. Then they start. They scored 24 unanswered, very similar to what Vandy did. Mm-hmm. They had a butt bounce interception where the interception was Ricardo Jones. I believe the butt was Ashton Hampton, where it deflects off the derriere, if you will. All of a sudden, they turn that over. They get short field. Klubnik does his job. All of a sudden, bam, we're in total control. They come back and avoid a catastrophe against Troy. You just need a butt bounce sometimes, folks.
That's it.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that in before I talk about it.
That's all you need. Elsewhere in ACC territory, Duke hosted Illinois. And what was kind of a nip and tuck game early looked like two pretty good teams going at each other. Duke's D-line was in Luke Altmyer's face for the entire first half. But then Brett Bielema and the boys put the hammer down in the second half.
All right.
And said, we are your trendy playoff pick. Please continue making us your trendy playoff pick.
They are good. They are not as good as I even want them to be after yesterday. You have to acknowledge Duke had five turnovers, and Manny Diaz got on the podium and said, we actually had six because we're so stupid that we had two players with the same number on a punt that ends up basically creating a turnover after the penalty that Illinois scores on. I did check with the quants as usual. Shout out to Parker and Stats Award, because I wanted to temper not my excitement, but almost my resignation. I was highly critical of Brett Bielema as a hire at Illinois versus some of the other candidates. This is a renewed troll. And I say this with all affection in the world. Brett Bielema has got his bully mojo back. This is a team, I don't know if you guys watched this game, very much in the same way that he was able to unnerve Shane Beamer in the bowl last year, he was driving Manny Diaz nuts by having D-line sub out after offensive subs.
The second Duke subbed,
Yes.
He would replace his entire defensive line, the center
which
judge
he's allowed to
there.
Do. Yes.
Yeah,
which
you're allowed to do. The entire offensive rhythm and all that.
But what that,
that
does, tempo. if you're listening, watching at home, you don't understand, well, what's the big deal of that? That then usually, by the way, you coach football, would force the offense then to make a read and adjust on, well, there was a personnel change here. Does that change the look that we're receiving? And that causes a delay of game penalty. You could see Manny Diaz, pretty even-tempered dude, I think, by and large. Like, he's kind of a statesman. He's got a broadcast background, pissed off. Like, this is the Bielema who has returned. Yes, Duke committed 5 turnovers plus 1. Yeah. But Illinois has the ability now to capitalize and close you out and suffocate you. There was a drive in the third quarter that essentially shuts the game out between turnovers where they go, it's like a 12 play, almost 7 minutes. They go almost 90 yards down the field. This is the team that the Wisconsin Brett Bielema told us Arkansas would be. There are a lot of mitigating factors. Things have changed in college football, personnel acquisition. I think Illinois as an athletic department has done a great job supporting Brett. But this is a team that is not elite talented. This is not Ohio State in the Big Ten. It's never going to be. But this is taking that next tier of potential and reaching that potential. Luke Altmaier is like the ideal September Heisman. I did this last year where I got really excited about him. He looked really good at like a Kansas game last year, and I remember getting really fired up. He comes back to earth when he plays like Oregon, Ohio State. Like I get that, and I think we're on that trajectory. However, he was a slush pile transfer guy, didn't work out at Ole Miss, has really done well for himself. Barry Lunny's offense, like, I can only say nice things about Illinois, and the thing I love the most is they piss you off in such a unique way. So kudos to Brett for that.
Yeah. Can I propose a new name for a game?
Okay.
So September 20th, week 4. Brett Bielema takes Illinois to Bloomington.
Yeah, the Indiana game. Yeah.
Can we call it the Troll Bowl? Because I think Cignetti and Bielema are cut from the same cloth. I think they're of a piece. So the Troll Bowl, which will probably decide our trendy Big Ten playoff pick. Illinois plays USC the next week, so not completely decided. But I am so excited for that game. Like, I'm trying to figure out my son's open date for high school football is Friday, September 19th, which means if I got to fly to a game, you know, night before, that's better for me because I don't like to miss his games, and so I tend to fly out day of. There's a lot of good games on September 20th. This one might be the one I'm most excited about.
Real fast, because Ross wrote a profile on Darian Mensa last week. Slight appendix or coda to your profile, Ross. Receivers, not that good. Mensa, great. Receivers, not that great at Duke.
I mean, Duke really shot itself in the foot in so many ways. Not just the turnovers, but like drop passes and ill-timed penalties.
Yeah.
It was bad. I mean, they were able to move the football. And like Andy said, I mean, their defensive front was swarming pretty good. I mean, Altmaier looked good for what he did because, I mean, Duke was flying around. Altmaier was
creating some miracles at times because there were some situations he probably shouldn't have been able to get out of. And he's turned out to be a great quarterback. And really, the thing, what was he guilty of at Ole Miss? Not being as good as Jackson Dart? Like, that's not a great sin. That you can still be a very good college quarterback if you're just not quite as good as Jackson Dart.
Well, I think there was a psychological issue. They talked about it in the broadcast. He saw a sports psychologist. You know, he was kind of talking to a pastor about it. I think some of that was getting lost in the wash with the Kiffin transition over from Matt Luke and the style of quarterback that they wanted. I think he just, I mean, these are kids. They do take it. They take it in a very specific, hard way. But I think he's acquitted himself very nicely. He's not a Heisman quarterback. He's a Carhartt quarterback. He's a work your ass off guy. And there's something to be said about that. All of the stuff that I wrote Bielema off for failing to achieve in Fayetteville, he has now done in a place where it's not easy to win football games. So kudos to him. Andy, we kind of...
It also may just mean that Fayetteville is a very hard place to win.
Yeah.
Which I think it keeps getting proven over and over again.
And it also means that Sam Pittman needs a statue built. Like, if he retires this year, if it doesn't work out this year, we talked about this before, what's Sam Pittman... Like, the way Golish breathed life back into USF, it's one of the hardest jobs maybe in college football because the expectation at Arkansas. Andy, I don't know if we disagree on this entirely, but Baylor comes back. Mm-hmm. They're down 14 in the fourth. Very kind of classic Big 12-y type game. Ross, you wrote that Dave Aranda kind of put himself back in school to learn to sort of be better on defense. They've given up 38. They've given up 45. They won this game. They needed to win this game. By the way, they had SMU 0-14 in their last meet, their last 14 games. 0-14 again in this sort of pseudo Southwest Conference rivalry. I'm not writing Aranda off. I did notice in the local media and the local fan sort of coverage on this afterwards that it was like, yeah, we won, but hot seat is still thing still a thing here we want to discuss. There's not satisfaction yet in Waco.
Yeah, it's been they were let's just be honest, they were getting run, right? I think SMU had two like double digit leads, was sort of controlling, dominating.
14 with 6 minutes to go.
Yeah. I mean, back on that, like what Sawyer did, fantastic.
Yeah, Sawyer, right. He played incredibly well. And
Really fast, Kansas State, maybe we have a larger discussion about this later, guys. But we have an issue here. Shout out to Army for switching quarterbacks, losing to Tarleton State to open their season, and then going on the road and beating a Power Four team. It was the quarterback switch is the fastest way to explain it. But I'm going to be honest, they got some help. Because this is one of the most perplexing things. This kid, Avery Johnson, has beautiful deep ball touch. He is he has the talent ceiling that we thought he did.
He's also usually the fastest player on the field.
Correct. So what are you doing? We need to have a conversation because Kansas State is woefully misusing this guy. And it sucks because I personally hate it when every five-star ends up at the same 10 programs in the sport. And when you have a native son who's from Kansas and he ends up at that legendary sort of have-not program, damn, dude, this was y'all's time to sort of figure it out and to become elite or at least win your damn conference. And I don't know if they're going to – I mean, they got to figure out how to bowl right now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And they could be 0-3 too, right? They had to get a last-second, I think, interception against North Dakota.
They were fighting North Dakota last week. They absolutely were.
How about Iowa, Iowa State? We haven't mentioned that one. Are the Cyclones in the sort of like sneaky CFP? Hey,
I don't think it's sneaky about it. They played for the Big 12 championship last year. If they'd won that game, they would have been in. I think at this point, with two Power Four wins in three games, you've got to put them in the discussion of they're probably going to be in the mix to play for the Big 12 title again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I put him in my projected bracket just because I feel like I'm doing like what you do, Ross, when you rank teams. I'm only using results from this season. They've earned it at this point.
Yeah.
No doubt. I still think Utah's probably the best team in that league, but a Utah-Iowa State game would be a banger right now.
Not that it would shake out this way, but can you imagine going to Ames in late December for a playoff game?
Yeah.
Boy, that would be hell on earth for some. I know it may not shake out that way.
That would be pretty amazing. Also, you guys want to guess how many days it's been since Iowa has beaten a ranked opponent?
We're into the thousands, right?
Right? Yeah.
We're deep into the thousands.
Yeah.
Okay.
1,428 days.
I'm telling you.
I saw that this morning. My jaw sort of hit the ground.
I don't want to pick on the kid, but shout out to, by the way, Washington State 2-0 importing the South Dakota State offense in and basically sort of like grafting an FCS team onto a pretty tough situation.
But Mark Granowski took the bigger check to go to Iowa.
And what happened? Yeah. I'm telling y'all, I find it interesting that they didn't transfer that over. I understand money's involved, but either that kid wasn't up to snuff per the evaluation of his previous staff, or he just took the check and Iowa'd all over him because they are as bad an offense as they always are.
Receivers, right?
When they had a couple of key drops. Iowa all over somebody, Godfrey, when the quarterback comes, because I'm trying to figure out, is it a force field?
I was going for something a little more degrading than a force field.
50 games as a starter. He was the Walter Payton Award winner in 2023, which is the FCS Heisman. So clearly he knows he can throw a football. And so, when you Iowa all over somebody, is it something you sprinkle on them? Is it something you pour from a bucket onto them?
I don't have a TV 14 explanation for what I was going for, but it's degrading.
It's like the opposite of pixie dust.
It actually shoots out of somewhere else. I got it.
Okay. I didn't necessarily have to go there. Hey, shout out to Ohio State. For beating West Virginia. Can I ask this real fast?
Your reward is you get to lose by 50 to Ohio State. Congratulations. Yeah. But yes.
Is it ever, or is, are we tolerating this ever? We know that West Virginia is turning over a ton and kind of starting from scratch. But is the tolerance level there anymore to have a loss like this when you are upping your NIL, you're bringing in the 50-odd transfers that we talked about a couple weeks ago, and then you lose to a team that has a first-year head coach? Now, there is some consistency on the Ohio staff. Basically, their OC, DC, their OC is now their head coach. They all stayed when Albin left, and they had some starters hang. Ohio, very consistent G5 program, but I'm curious if West Virginia fans are like, nope, you have this. We can't tolerate this, or it's like, hey, it's week two of this new era.
No, they can't tolerate this. They're pissed.
They're not tolerating a loss to Ohio, and it kind of stinks because you know the Backyard Brawl is this coming week, and everybody was all excited. I was thinking about riding over for it.
Yeah,
maybe, but that's
and College
not.
Game Day bailed on them. They're going to Knoxville.
Yeah. And then I bailed on LSU, Florida. Thank you, Gators, and I'm going to Texas A&M, Notre Dame instead now,
guys.
So I had to change all that. So that was fun. By the way, we mentioned Dan Mullen earlier in the show. Dan Mullen,
yep, this is where I'm going.
Yep. How about that?
Hey, here's my question.
Through UCLA.
Here's my question. Wouldn't he make a pretty, like based off of Dan's charisma, if you will, wouldn't he make a great UCLA head coach?
So, interesting thing about that. Dan Mullen became the coach at Florida because Chip Kelly chose the UCLA job over Florida.
That's right. Turned the job down.
Just throwing
that out there. I think Mullen's signature brand of platinum aloofness would work well in Brentwood, is all I'm saying. All right.
And Fran Brown running the team the game on the field because he wasn't very happy about the performance against UConn where they needed this last second comeback, right, to beat the Huskies.
Andy,
so ran them in sprints.
Andy. Back down in Gainesville, there's a guy who is probably not going to be the sexiest pick in the world, but I called him on Thursday the most overlooked head coach in the SEC, if such a thing is even possible.
Eli Drinkwitz.
Missouri, they beat Kansas. I'm just saying, if you like offense, if you
let me put it with that OBC spirit.
I'm just going to stop making picks.
Eli might have had his eye on the Florida job.
Sorry.
Last year.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, for sure.
Just, two eyes. Yeah, he had two eyes. Yeah, he had two eyes.
He makes a lot of sense for that job. I mean, he does. We probably shouldn't be talking about this on September 7th, but what the hell?
Yeah. Let's give Billy Napier a chance to dig out of the hole.
Yeah,
sure.
Like he had last year.
But they got some hosses over there. I mean, obviously, I picked Kansas to cover. Felt really good about it for three quarters. But, Missouri. Missouri's got the running back. Man. Really impressive.
Yeah,
they've got some horses there.
Shout out to Fresno State for making me look somewhat competent there.
And also, shout out about those.
If you want to survive working for Bobby Petrino, it works. Although I do think he is his actual son-in-law. Missouri State first win as an FBS program over Marshall. Tough week in West Virginia for college football.
You talk about working for Bobby Petrino like that's like you're marrying Bobby Petrino's daughter. That's scarier than working for him.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah.
I'm going to stutter and stop talking there so I don't say anything especially mean. It's certainly a life choice. Although I like that staff there. It was a big win for them.
By the way, I got a feeling pick.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Arkansas State lost 56-14.
Yeah, my feelings.
I only watched that box score for you, Andy.
My two feelings are not good so far.
Austin Simmons looks fine, by the way. We discussed this. He is probably fine for Ole Miss, but they have Arkansas, which is not nothing next week, and then Tulane after that, which might actually be a tougher game.
So the Green Wave need
to get healthy.
Yeah. Rolling along with Mr. Jake Retzlaff.
Yeah. Louisville, ugly win. JMU. I didn't realize how many ACC teams
win your clunkers.
A lot of ugly wins.
Louisville,
LSU, Clemson.
Yeah.
A lot of ugly wins from kind of the, you know.
Yeah. The theme of the weekend was to get down by 12-16. Yeah. And then remember what you're supposed to do, which, by the way, in almost every instance, with the exception of like Baylor, is just run the damn ball.
Yeah. Run the dang ball.
Universal advice.
Come on, Bobo.
Which we're going to probably hear a lot of when Georgia plays Tennessee next week, because Georgia fans love to scream at Mike Bobo to run the ball, even when he needs to throw it. Gentlemen, we have a ton to talk about on Tuesday and on Thursday. Conference play begins in earnest in a couple of different leagues. Also, we want to get into this Penn State Adidas deal and really what it means globally with Adidas, you know, getting into the NIL game, you know, kind of like they were in the NIL game before. If you remember the federal basketball investigation, but you know, now they can do it.
And buckle up, boys. We're going to have some fun congressional talk is coming.
That's what I want.
Yay! Yes.
You're right in the middle of the
October.
Season.
Let's go. Yes. That's what I want.
We'll limit that. limit that. We're going to
try to limit that as much as we can. Yeah.
We're going to have Ross's congressional minute, and we're going to literally give Ross a minute.
Yeah.
And when the clock expires, we're done.
I like it.
All right. All that and more on the College Football Inquirer coming up this week. We'll talk to you soon.